Welcome to the Estate Planning Experts Podcast. Created by best-selling author and nationally recognized estate planning attorney, Shane Smith. On each episode, we bring together experts in various aspects of estate planning to help you protect your family, your assets, and your peace of mind. To get your free copy of Mr. Smith's Consumer Awareness Guide, How to Avoid the 7 Deadly Sins of Estate Planning, or if you are in Atlanta and are interested in your free Estate Planning for Life consultation, simply register at www.theestateattorneyatlanta.com.
Welcome to this edition of the Estate Planning Experts. Today I am here with Casey Smith and Sonia Gonzalez of Wiser Wealth Management and Michael Esprinette of Michael Esprinette Law. Casey, Michael, Sonia, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
All right, we appreciate it. I'm going to get started with Casey. Casey, what inspired you to become a financial advisor?
Well, I always enjoyed how the stock market works, how money works in general. And I started off on the brokerage side of the business down in Atlanta back in 2000, but it eventually didn't like the commission world at all. I felt like that products were all driven for corporate profits and people thought last of the client in the end. So we created a fiduciary fee-only firm up here in Marietta. And I really like the position that we're in, where we can work in the best interest of the client. We can either charge by the hour or we're charging a percentage of assets under management.
And Sonia, how about you?
I actually started off in a staff position at a financial services firm and decided that I really wanted to work one-on-one with clients. Because I enjoy helping people, and in the role that I have right now, as a financial planner, I really help them, you know, identify what their goals are and then help them figure out how they can achieve them. And it's very rewarding to me.
And Michael, what inspired you to become an attorney?
That's a difficult question. I don't know. It's something I always wanted to do. Specifically, as far as doing estate planning, though, I kind of started off on the litigation side, and I did estate trust and complex business litigation in Florida, and I enjoyed it while I was doing it, but now I've gotten into where I'm on the planning side, and I like being able to sort of, having seen the problems that arise, being able to anticipate and plan for those problems.
Great. And Casey, how did you get to this particular firm?
This particular what?
This particular firm. How did you get to Wiser?
So I created the firm in 2001. We started off as under a different company name, but in 2007, I purchased a company called Wiser Financial Services, which we rebranded into Wiser Wealth Management.
And Michael, did you start the Michael Esprinette Law Firm right out of law school, or did you work somewhere else first?
No, I was with a law firm down in Orlando, Florida, for a number of years, and my wife's actually a commercial pilot, and we decided to relocate to Atlanta, Georgia, so she wouldn't have to commute. I started my own practice when I got here. I've had it about 6.5 years now.
And if we were to gather, let's say, you know, I mean, there's a famous joke about, you know, if you put 10 economists in a room and ask them a question, you'll get 10 different answers. You three at least are all in the same room and probably work together, so we've got a better chance of getting similar answers to the same questions. But we found there are a lot of misconceptions around estate planning. If, Casey, if a layperson were to ask you for the first time, come into your office and say, what is estate planning? How would you answer that question?
Well, that in itself is a good question. Generally, when we refer to estate planning, we're talking about wills and trusts, essentially what happens after they're gone. And from a pure asset standpoint of where your asset's going to transfer to, and also any tax liabilities that your estate may incur during that process.
So, Anne, how would you define it?
I define it as one part of the total financial planning process, and it's a very important part. One of my jobs is we're looking at current situations and future situations while they're still living, but then that also translates into, well, what happens if they become incapacitated or after they're gone? It's very holistic and long range.
And Michael?
I would kind of build on what Sonia said there. And one of the benefits of having, financial planning, money management, fiduciary money management, and estate planning all together is you kind of look at the whole picture for the person. You're addressing the management of the money while they're alive, but you're also looking at planning how to maximize, if it's important to the person, maximize what they leave to their children or to the, the charity or institution that they care about, and still have the quality of life financially that they're looking for now.
And I'll go in reverse order. Michael, what do you like best about estate planning, about being able to provide those services?
Well, I kind of call myself a nerd about it a little bit. It's something I really enjoy doing, and because it's an area of people's lives that they typically try to avoid, they don't want to think about it, they don't want to deal with it, it's not something people take the time to read about just because they dread it. And what I enjoy is being able to say, look, it's not that bad. Here's the options, here's what can happen, and I don't make them come weighted in with carts of papers and filling out tons of different forms and stuff. We just start with a conversation to find out where they are, where they want to be, and what I can do to help them get there. And it just sort of reduces the stress level dramatically, and it makes it so that the whole process is not as threatening. I think that's what I like about it most.
Casey, how about you?
Well, I always tell people that we can manage the money and do planning for retirement very well, and clients may execute well, but if we don't transfer those assets to the next generation or transfer to the charities that the client wants their accumulated assets to go to, then it's almost like, what's the point? If you can't pass it off to the next stage. So I kind of look at it as in tiers, right? So there's retirement planning, overall risk management, all those pieces come together, and the estate planning is kind of finishes it off to make sure that the wishes of our clients are seen. So obviously Michael is very passionate about that side of our practice. I get more excited about the portfolio management and the retirement planning portion. So I think that's how we work so well together, is that he's able to step in and continue what we've started and make sure that it passes on.
Sonia, what about you?
Well, to continue on what Casey was said, I'm obviously not the person that's actually doing the estate planning, the technical parts of it, but I really enjoy that the team that has been pulled together here, to be able to know that the planning that I do for them, for the clients, can be extended beyond their own lifetime. And kind of extends what the end game is. The end game is not their retirement. The end game is what happens after they pass on. And to have that working relationship with someone that we trust is very beneficial for me, to have confidence that our clients are being taken care of.
That makes total sense. Sonia, I'll start this one off with you. What are some of the most common mistakes you see clients making when planning their estate?
Not doing it. And I confess that we, my husband and I ourselves, delayed quite a bit in not having that done, and Michael made me see the error of our ways. The thing is, you just don't know what life's going to throw at you, and it's never, particularly when you're looking at young families with children, it's never too early to start. Although we do get a lot of clients coming in that are in their mid-50s, and while they're looking at retirement, then we also encourage them to look at, you know, beyond their own lives at that time as well.
Casey, what are some of the most common mistakes you see other than what Sonia just said?
A lot of people think that they have it done, and you look at their will, and it might point to a ex-spouse, or it points to people to be executors who are no longer living. So it's really it's attention to detail. We've seen people that have wills that don't take care of like a special needs child very well. So there's just a lot of it's just they did it quickly and or someone did it for them quickly to generate a fee, but never really paid attention to the consequences. So really it's more of attention to detail that I think that. A lot of people are missing in their estate planning.
Michael, how about you?
I think the thing I've seen a lot and hopefully have tried to prevent every time I get the chance is when you have blended families are increasingly common where, you know, one spouse has children, the other spouse has children. Maybe they get married later in life and don't have any more, but they each have the own children they came in with, or they get married younger and have children together. So you end up with this situation, an old school estate planning, you know, you kind of leave everything to the surviving spouse, and then the spouse is supposed to leave everything to the children. Well, in a blended family situation, I have seen happen where they just think it's going to work out. Everything's left to the surviving spouse, but then everything gets left to that spouse's children. And the children of the first spouse to die end up getting nothing. And it wasn't what was intended, but they never really thought it through, and it's what happened. And that can make for a lot of hard feelings, and, you know, and it doesn't actually accomplish what the people intended. That, I would say, probably the biggest mistake I've run into.
And how do you help people solve those problems, Michael?
Well, especially if it's an older, you know, an older person, maybe they're a widow or a widower, and, you know, their advanced years, their children are adult, is you have a conversation with that person and their adult children if they are comfortable with that and say, look, as you know, Dad's looking at getting remarried here, but he wants the money that he and your mother worked for all these years to go to you when he's gone, and we're going to put together a trust that makes sure that happens. And it's not that, you know, the kids are like, well, we want the money, period, and Dad can't get married unless he gives it to us. It's just about partially being respectful of their mother's memory and all of her hard work and making sure that that's honored. And it can make that transition into seeing a parent get married a lot easier, knowing that they're going into it in a thoughtful way and planning to make sure that, you know, the future that mom and dad had built before mom died ends up with the right children. And it gives everyone a lot of peace of mind about after dad's gone and even about the remarriage.
Casey, how do you help your clients solve the types of problems that you brought up?
Well, how we work here, so Sonia is primarily doing the financial planning with the client. I'm a part of the beginning of the process and the delivery of the process, or delivery of the plan. My role here is more working with the overall picture. So when I see that there is a need, then that's when I would bring Michael into the room because there's no better person to hear from than the actual estate planning attorney versus someone who just, you know, knows a lot about it but is not necessarily the expert. So my role here is to bring Michael into the picture so that he can address the issues. But generally speaking, when we see it, I just point it out and say, this is a threat, this is why it's a threat, and this is why you need to change it. But I'll refer you to Michael to actually execute that.
And what estate planning technique do you use that you wish more of your clients knew more about, Casey?
Revocable living trust. So when we onboard a new client, we go through a very lengthy planning process. So we're looking at property casualty, we're looking at long-term care, none of this stuff we actually sell, but we certainly understand the importance of that role with the client. So I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought. What was your question again?
You were talking about why you like what an irrevocable living trust is and why you like
it. Oh, yeah. Okay, I'm sorry. You'll have to edit that part out. So the revocable living trust part is very important. One, it allows you to skip probate. It allows, really, I think, for more airtight wishes to be carried out, where I think with wills, especially with some family dynamics, you're opening yourself up to potentially trouble. It also allows you to settle the estate potentially faster than going through the probate process. And it's just, to me, it's a lot cleaner. You know, we're titling everything now in the name of the revocable living trust versus hoping that it, you know, probate carries out the way it's supposed to. Obviously, in Georgia, probate is not necessarily a hard process unless someone else wants it to be. And with revocable living trust, I find that it's a lot cleaner, even when you have siblings or parties that could cause trouble in the future. All of our clients, when they come through our firm, generally I recommend that they talk to Michael about the revocable living trust. And I always joke and say our firm doesn't want to get involved in your estate's probate, and neither do your children. So that's one thing I wish more people would know more about, but obviously we're here to educate them about that.
Sonia, how about you? What estate planning technique do you like that you wish more clients knew about?
I would just echo what Casey said. Wills are good. To set up a will, and Michael can speak more to this a little bit, you know, wills are cheaper in the initial beginning. And sometimes you have clients where, you know, all they can afford is to kind of get the minimum done. But certainly a revocable living trust in the long run end up being a better option because it saves so much headache and cost at the end of things, at the end game.
And Michael, what about you?
I think the revocable living trust is a good tool, since it's been covered, I'm going to touch on something else completely, and that's a durable financial power of attorney. I actually recently had a family member who had not done, somewhat distant family member, had not done one, and was at end of life in a hospital, and there was no way for the family to pay his bills, to do anything for him, because he had not done one of these directives. So they ended up having to go to court, petition to be the son be appointed as guardian over his father, so that he could handle all of those, you know, the hospital bills, all of that stuff that needs to be done that no one was authorized to do. And, you know, it's like probably $6,000 to do that, whereas executing a durable financial power of attorney would have accomplished the same thing. It would have taken, you know, a half an hour and been a few $100 or whatever it is to do a document like that. But, you know, it's one of those things that people don't want to think about needing that kind of a thing. And when you contrast how difficult it is to be appointed to fill that role when it's too late for the person to choose you versus the person designating someone ahead of time. The cost, the hassle factor, the difference is huge. And it's something that I think everyone should have a durable financial part of it, a power of attorney as part of their overall plan.
Without revealing any names, Casey, you obviously know you have confidentiality policies to protect the privacy of your client. Let's just call them Mr. and Mrs. Jones. Can you tell us about a recent interesting estate plan that you were able to do?
Well, I would say some of the more interesting ones I've done recently have actually been more like a widow or a widower situation with no family. And they really hadn't thought about, well, what happens to my estate when I die? And, you know, because they, you know, they don't think of themselves as having that much money or whatever. And then you sit down and talk to them and they're like, well, I thought it would just go to X or whatever. And you realize they actually have no concept. And I had a situation where the client, it was not a long marriage. The wife passed from an illness, and he had no relatives of any kind. He didn't even have any cousins, and they never had children. And so he ended up saying, hey, I actually need to think about this, and where do I want my estate to go, since I don't really have anyone that I need to provide for. And he ended up choosing to leave his estate to a nonprofit that dealt specifically with the illness that his wife had before she passed. And before starting that conversation with him, he hadn't really thought about what would happen since his wife was gone and they didn't have children and he had no relatives to speak of. And I thought, I'm running into that type of a situation more and more often where there is no sort of natural next of kin, where they're having to be somewhat creative in choosing, you know, where do I want my life's work to end up when I'm gone? And you know, it ends up being sometimes a school or a church or a hospital or that type of thing. I would have to say that type of planning recently has been pretty interesting.
All right. Next. Who wants to go next?
I'll go next. That's fine. This is Casey. I think a lot of what we do is we have people that don't have anything on the wealth management side, and we're adding to it, which rather late, really. But I think the most interesting case was one that I was not involved in directly, but we had a overzealous, use that word, that's probably even not the right word. We had a broker who tried to take advantage of a lady who was not part of our firm. It was someone who was referred to us, and basically he'd weaseled his way in to be the 100% beneficiary of her estate.
Oh, my God.
And that was very interesting because I'm a financial advisor. I'm a fiduciary RIA running a fee-only shop. I don't interact very often with the guys who run the banks and the brokerage houses. And even when we basically went to it's a large bank, went to that bank and said, hey, this person's doing this. And they're kind of like, well, but all the products he sold her were suitable for her, so therefore he really hasn't done anything wrong. And it wasn't until Michael said, hey, this is going to court now, that they let him go. And so that was all tied around estate planning, simply because... Sorry, I got a train going by. Simply because, she wanted her will to go to a school that she lived near down in Atlanta. And Michael changed the will, and then after she passed away, we we got to see the will challenged by this broker. This broker went and challenged the will in court. In the process, he was forced to leave his broker. But that by far is probably the craziest, most interesting story to me. And this lady, before she passed away, actually ended up in court. The court was trying to decide if she was competent or not. And when he sat in the courtroom, she just locked up. She was so scared of him. And she locked up. And in the end, the court took over guardianship over her affairs, which is probably a good thing to kind of loosen his hands from the situation. But it's a combination of a broker gone bad and then also estate planning, where, I wish that she would have listened to Michael and done revocable living trust. Maybe that would have been a little bit better in the end. I don't know. But
could have avoided a will contest, possibly.
Right.
So. Wow.
That happens.
Tony, I don't know. Can you top that?
I'm not sure I can top that. That is kind of the most interesting, craziest thing that we've dealt with since I've been with Wiser. Some of the other situations that come up is when you have a couple and one of the spouse is chronically ill, and the medical costs for that are significantly high. And how do you plan for that? And what happens to the care of that person if the caretaker is gone? And that is certainly a situation we're dealing with right now with one of our clients.
And who is an ideal client for you, and what is the first step you want them to take?
Well, we're a very unique firm in that most firms that do exactly what we do are probably going to have, $5 million minimums. And we really were able to work with a lot of different type of people. We have, obviously, extremely successful high net worth individuals, as well as young people who are in business for themselves or highly compensated that are saving on a monthly basis. So really our ideal client probably overall be like a small business owner who has we do 401k plans as well. So we'll go into a business and provide investment advice to those individual participants, his or her employees, but at the same time also helping the business owner in that we can provide tax, legal, and financial planning all in one shop. And that's what helps make us unique. Plus, we accept the fiduciary duty of that advice, which is easier to find now than it was when we started over 10 years ago, but certainly still very unique. But it's fun to be able to come in with our expertise to overlay on a business owner who probably has an expertise in something we know nothing about. Like we have a pharmaceutical manufacturing company now. It's very interesting to learn about what they do, but they needed help with a lot of different things internally that we were able to provide.
And what is the idea of first step you want them to take? Where should they go to a website, call you, make an appointment, read something?
Yeah, they can learn a little more about us at wiserinvestor.com. That's wiserinvestor.com. And they can read about our firm and what we stand for. And then really the best thing to do is pick up the phone and give us a call at our number. They're listed on the site. And we always offer a complimentary couple hour meeting to talk to the people in the firm that they think they need services from.
And Michael, how about you?
I would say I have a website. It's msb-law.com. But truthfully, a lot of times I get my clients through referrals, either through Casey and Wiser Wealth Management or through existing clients or business customers, business clients, that kind of thing. But the best place to start is a conversation. And I don't charge for that initial meeting. And it's just to get a sense of what the various issues that they're facing, whether they're a small business owner, that also needs to mesh their estate plan with the business plan, or it's just that conversation where you can get a broad understanding of what they're doing and what they want to accomplish and how we can help them get there.
What should I have asked you that I forgot to ask you? Or is there anything else you'd like to share?
From an estate planning perspective, I think we've covered it really well.
Okay. Well, Casey, Michael, Sonia, thank you so much for agreeing to do this interview. You've added a whole lot of value, and we greatly appreciate your advice. And again, folks, for the folks who are resonating with what you're saying, we encourage them to go check out the Wiser Group. And thanks again for doing the interview.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.